My name is Lewis, and I am an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlanta Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that we may better carry the message of AA, and since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons, Wilbur and Harry, have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Gabriel will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm Gabriel. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Leandro will read the steps.
Thank you, Tom. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through our prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Jim will read the traditions.
My name is Jim and I am an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement from AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholics who still suffer. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Please join us in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The format of tonight's meeting is one 10-minute speaker, our information break, the main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by the anniversary celebrants. Our first 10-minute speaker is Mike W.
Hello, I'm Mike. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Atlantic Group. This is my home group. I got sober March 18th of 2006. My sponsor is Duncan, and I'm working steps 9 through 12. I want to thank Chris for asking me to speak, and I just wanted to start by saying that I'm very grateful and honored to be standing here, and there's nothing that I could have done under my own power or my own will that could have relieved my desire to drink alcohol and my obsession to drink alcohol. And I am very grateful for that, and it's a wonderful thing to be standing here at my home group. What it was like, I grew up upstate, and I remember a few years of happiness in my childhood, and then things got a little difficult. My parents split up when I was 8. The divorce was final pretty quickly, and they were both remarried by the time I was about 10. So there was a lot of confusion, a lot of conflict in both households. And it's not really that unique of a situation, and I mention it mainly because it was the beginning of my fear. And, I know now that it was fear of, losing what I had and fear of not getting what I wanted. And even though as a child, those fears may have been justified at the time, I think that, they were eventually cultivated into resentments and, a deep-seated self-centered fear, and which I believe to be the root of my alcoholism. And, I remember drinking for the effect that alcohol had on me at a young age, but it was never very, it didn't go very far from there. It was mainly at cookouts or, family get-togethers. I would sneak drinks sometimes when I was left with a babysitter and the babysitter was too busy with their boyfriend or something. I would, hit the liquor cabinet a little bit. An obsession certainly didn't set in yet, but it did show me, and it was a demonstration to me at a young age, what alcohol was capable of doing for me. And it instantly, it relieved my fear. It relieved, that fear that I just described about, the future. And, in the interest of time, I'll just fast forward and, I didn't do much drinking in high school. I had some very solid friends. There wasn't a lot of communication in my household, but I found some really good friends whose parents basically took me in as their own, and so I was there many weekends, and it was a very solid environment. I think that I did suffer with depression in high school, though, and so by the time I left for college, it really was like a dam breaking for me, and I really hit the ground running, and I just fell in love with alcohol as soon as I was living on my own. it was the answer to all my problems. It made me feel superhuman. It made me able to speak with people and interact with people in a way that I had been, you know, up to that point, you know, too fearful of doing. And it also initially addressed my depression. And that feeling of, you know, that of, you know, false sense of well-being that it gave me felt really good. And for many years it worked for me. And I think, you know, just to keep it sort of short, from the age of 21 to 34, I drank progressively to eventually just complete unmanageability. And my desire to drink entailed drinking to oblivion by the time, you know, my last 5 years of drinking. I wanted to mention that I definitely, during that time, you know, between when alcohol stopped working for me and it became more of a nightmare than anything else, I really became a product of my resentment. I became... not a product, what was I going to say? My resentments, I defined myself by my resentment, and I was happy to do it. I was a cynic. I had a nihilistic sort of spirit, and, you know, I wanted to drink as much as I could. I wasn't the kind of drunk who had to wake up and have a drink in the morning, but once I started, I didn't stop. And it got to the point where I would literally walk in a bar telling myself that I would have one or two, and I would be closing the bar and, you know, with the hope of getting to work in the morning at 8 a.m. And it became a living hell. And let's see. So when things got so bad that I began to really black out a lot, and I was injuring myself. And I woke up one day in bed, almost unable to move. And I had to go back to the bar that I was the last night just to find out what happened to me. And someone had found me at the bottom of a marble staircase, like 15 stairs in an apartment building. And I rolled out of bed, managed to roll out of bed. And I, you know, here I am facing myself in the mirror and shoulders sort of sticking out in an unnatural way. And looking at myself, you know, in the mirror, barely able to do so, and just being, you know, what is wrong with me? And not knowing what happened, and it scared me. But, you know, I sat in my favorite bar for the next 3 months, you know, just afraid and in pain, and you know, wondering what was going to become of me. I was definitely at the jumping off point. And I confided in my boss, and by the grace of God, my boss knew my sponsor from years back, and I had actually met my sponsor years before under different circumstances, and my boss asked if I remembered Duncan, and I did, and he had some sobriety, and he had a solution, and he qualified himself to me as an alcoholic, and he showed me that there was a solution. I counted days here, which was it was a difficult experience, but it was also a wonderful one, because this is the best home group in my experience. And but my sponsor also brought me to PAX, which is a men's group. And that was the first meeting that he brought me to. And you know, I knew from starting to work the steps and admitting I was powerless and that my life had become unmanageable. I think I came in with that knowledge, but Duncan had me do certain writings that would make me realize this in terms of the program. And you know, I made a decision to turn my will over to the care of God as I understood him. And at the time, I wasn't sure what that was. And I just trusted that Duncan believed in what he believed in. And I had the willingness. And that's all you really need to get a start. So I would say that the next big thing for me, or the spiritual experience, I think, began to really take shape when I was done with my fourth step, and I had listed all of my resentments. And I remember looking at this list and thinking, you know, none of these people are in my life anymore. You know, what happened? And up to that point, I had always thought that it was everyone else's fault, and I was always right about everything. And the only reason why these people weren't in my life anymore is because they were wrong. And but I basically drank everyone out of my life that was special to me, everyone and everything. And alcohol took me, my drinking took me so far away from the people that love me and the people that I love. So with the fourth step, I was able to see, with my sponsor's help, what my part in all my resentments were. And it was really the beginning of a spiritual experience. Wow. 1 minute. But it really culminated with the ninth step and being able to look people in the eye and sit down with people whom I had wronged and who were gone from my life, and to make amends and to see them come back into my life, both of my parents. I just spent the weekend with my mother and my three beautiful nieces. I have an interest in those people in my life, and I have an interest in all of you now, in my fellows, which was never the case before. I'm quickly running out of time, but with the help of my sponsor, I had a spiritual experience. And there's no reason why you have to ever feel the way that I felt anymore. There's a solution here, and this is a great home group to have, and there's great sponsorship here. And I have benefited beyond words by the spiritual examples that I've seen here at Atlantic Group. And it's not easy at first, but it really is a wonderful journey, and I'm just starting it. I was consumed with fear about the future before, and now I can honestly say that that's no longer the case, and I have hope for the first time in my life. And I guess that's all the time. That was quick. Thank you very much for my sobriety.
My name's Duncan, and I'm an alcoholic. Our seventh tradition states every A group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. The baskets will now be passed.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Joyce, and definitely an alcoholic. For a minute there, I thought I was in the military. You know, everybody was so structured. The wax and the waves and the Army and the Navy. Hi, my name is Joyce, and I'm an alcoholic. I just love this group. I want to thank the chairperson, Helen, for her hospitality, calling me today, as well as we talked before. I want to thank Marita for her instructions of suggestions of how the format is. That's very, very important. And I want to thank the timekeeper. Yeah. All that's important, because, you know, we can go get on a roll. And, we don't, I know when I first came in and they told me at a beginner's meeting that, I needed to tell the beginners, but I gotta tell my story. You know, it took me some years before I could kick in with the beginner's meeting. But anyway, I got here, through Father Dugan Church, St. Charles Church that I was going to. I'm going to be putting it out here as well as it comes to me. My first drink was Anisette. That's a clear beverage. It looked like gin. And my girlfriend's father, Mr. Reeves, used to bring it to us when we were teenagers. And since I've been in AA, okay. Stagehands. Since I've been in AA, and it's come to me, my inventory, I wonder why Mr. Reeves used to bring us Anisette when we was 14 and 15 years old. Never got fresh or nothing, you know, that I learned about after coming to the meetings. And it dawned, well, he was from the island, and the island people, you know, they either with rum and what have you, so, or toddy. Some of us have had toddies that our parents have given us. But that was, I would say that was my first drink, and we used to mix it with Pepsi Cola to make it look like, Shinley, Four Roses, Hunters, Park and Tilfit, and all the rest. Hunters, I went through all of them. Cause everyone that I saw that you didn't look like you was getting drunk off or high, I would come up to you and ask you, what you drinking? And when you would tell me, I would try that, you know, I would try that brand. But, my drinking went on sociable with my girlfriends. I came up with five girls. We all met after before junior high school. And we all hung out together and we all drank. And we all eventually got married, most of us, and had children. Now, my mother died when I was 10 years old. And, my aunt, her sister died 3 weeks apart. And my grandmother boarded me out to her best friend, that lived next door. We were friends anyway, the two daughters that they had and myself. And I had a disease called eczema. It looked like somebody had, not completely threw lye on me, but I had all that rash. And wherever I sat, you could tell that I was there because the scales would be there from my supposedly not scratching. But I had it from the age of 3 to 10 years old. My mother had to put a stocking cap on my head so they could, cause they had shaved it so they can get all the ointment in my scalp. It was a very itching disease. And, my mother died. She had, Jessica had gotten me out of City Hospital. I go way back. City Hospital on 59th Street. And, I never had it no more like I had it. But when the weather is, in the summer, is 84 degrees or more, my neck breaks out with the prickly heat. And I learned that when I was in Florida at Disney World in 1979. That has very much improved because I use sunblock. You know, I didn't think black people use sunblock, you know. But I had to get some sunblock down there when I was in Florida. And I keep it in my cabinet in the bathroom. I use that aloe vera gel, which is very good. Oh, yeah, it's very, very good. So we live and learn every day in here. The program works if you want it. I'm going to repeat that. The program works if you want it. When I came in, as I said, Father Dugan had suggested AA to me. And I took that suggestion. I said to Father Dugan, because I can identify with Bill W. Dig that. I can identify with Bill. That he had to find somebody to talk to. See, the confession booth had played out. You know, that had played out. I wanted to see somebody and tell them about the things that I was doing. Because in the confession booth, that door's closed. They don't see you. You don't see them. They just pull that little shutter, and you dump, you know? So that particular day, the next day, I was now working at Chase Manhattan Bank. That's another story how I got to that. But I got there, okay, in 1969. So I needed to talk to one of the priests, and Monsignor Drew and Father Kelly had gave me the religious instructions for 3 months. The first night I went, when the girl I was raised with invited me to St. Anthony Novena, a word that I didn't know that I'm going to use, I had a semblance of peace. And I wanted to join right away. And Monsignor Drew and Father Kelly said, no, you got to come for 3 months. So I identify with that because I was a school aide from 1962 to 1967, and they had religious instructions every Thursday at 2 p.m. So that was familiar to my mind. So anyway, I went, and I had started playing poker when I worked, another job, Chock Full of Nuts. Chock Full of Nuts, I got a job in Chock Full of Nuts, and down on 43rd and Lexington, and I was always, I didn't know that the alcohol had the word, better word in the book, warped my mind to spiritual bankruptcy, because I always thought that when I was on a subway that I wanted to think, my mind would say jump. And that would make me fearful more, and the more fearful I got, the more I drank. Because I felt as though I could drown them thoughts away. But after being suggested to come to Alcoholic Anonymous, the very first night that I went, my eyes rolled across the first step. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. And something hit me gut level in my stomach and said, it is alcohol. After all them bouts, after doing this, after not cooking, after not sending the kids to school. There was times when I would go to school with my son, and I should have been in there with a guidance counselor, and he should have been standing outside waiting for me, you know? Yeah, because I have my little half a pint in my bag, you know, and if anybody know about sneak drinking, I'd go in the bathroom. I had sense enough not to hide the bottle in the oven, but I would hide it under the mattress, you know, and I didn't have no tank toilet. We had to flush, pull the thing. So I learned about them tank toilets after coming in AA, how people hid them in there, but we had to pull string. And there was times when, with my normal behavior, and I would be with my husband, you know, we'd be in bed, and I wanted to, thoughts would come like, hang yourself. Now, see, I didn't have no chandelier. It was one light bulb and one string, you know. So it wasn't no chandelier there. So I don't even think I tried to figure out how I was going to do it, but thank God I didn't do it. But those are the different insane things that would come to my mind, and I surely didn't know why. I didn't know that. I didn't know nothing about alcoholism. I didn't know there was a place called Alcohol Anonymous, and I didn't know that I had became an alcoholic. Even though there were days when I got up and I was like the St. Vitus dance, shaking, you know, and my children would say, Mom, what's the matter? I said, oh, I got the St. Vitus dance. I don't know where that came from. But the shakes, me and my girlfriends would hold each other's drink to each other in the bar because we didn't scorn each other. We didn't know what was going on. We just thought we needed a Rheingold, Cole Rheingold, you know, the houseful hints. Eat some chitlins so it can slide up off your stomach as the liquor go down, or some collard greens with some fat back in it, because that's real greasy. These are the things that we knew about. Yeah, collard greens with fat back. Not bacon, fat back. And these were the different things that we picked up from different people that drank. And take a BC powder at night. My girlfriend Loretta, God bless her, Grandmother Ma Carey would say, take a BC powder so you won't have a headache the next day. I drank so much citric magnesia trying to wash that alcohol out of me, it wasn't funny. But none of that worked, because you see me here. None of that worked, okay? It was just another routine of doing something. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, Father Dugan suggested AA to me. Because we was face to face. Well, no rectory, no confession booth. We were in the rectory. And in his Irish brogue, he said, Joyce, I'm going to suggest that you go to AA. And I didn't know what AA was, but I had so much belief in the Catholic Church at that time, becoming a convert, and the girl that took me there, who I was raised with, who fought battles for me when I had that eczema, that the children used to, in order for them to play with me, I was bringing my grandmother's little church money. She was the treasurer of the Willing Workers Club, and I'd bring my little nickels and dimes and give to them so they would sit next to me. And Sister, the girl I was raised with, was the one that invited me to St. Charles Church. Now, Sister drank, too, but she said to me one day, she said, they call me Chicky, and I always like to say this. My mother didn't give me the name Chicky, but in the days when you young people don't know nothing about this, what I'm going to say. When the ice man used to bring the block of ice on his shoulder with the tongs, the big tongs, and carry that ice all up to the top floor. Wasn't no hardly no elevators where I lived at. And when they come in by me being short, I guess I was like that, and they would say, hey, Chicky, 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 Chicky. So I say I probably got that name, Chicky, you know, looking, walking like a little chicken. So anyway, on my very first meeting, like I said, I heard the lady speak. I didn't know nothing about the word qualification. I didn't know nothing about tell your story. I heard this lady speak that was not the color of my skin. She said she had walked 15 blocks to hide her empty bottle so her husband wouldn't know how much alcohol she had drank on State Street. I didn't know nothing. Only time I knew about the word identify because I used to take numbers, and if you they'd come in there and get you out the lobby or the vestibule, that's when they would have somebody identify you, the cop identify you. So I identified with her, but I didn't know. I identified with her suffering because my husband had 86 me in the bars. And for those who don't know what 86 mean, when she come in, don't serve her nothing. That was on 7th Avenue, 8th Avenue. But, of course, he didn't know about Convent Avenue, St. Nicholas Avenue, Broadway. And that was during the time the 4-for-1 was out. 4 drinks for $1. And we used to say, yeah, 4 drinks for $1. Some was 3-for-1, some was 4-for-1. And that was the time when me and my girlfriend used to say, oh, they making this too fast at Seagram 7 and stuff. It's green and all kind of stuff, finding fault with it. Sometimes we'd have 12 and 16 drinks in front of us. But we never scorned each other. We never said to each other, you gonna drink all that? We never did that. We just had them lined up. And I knew what a sponsor was years ago. When my money ran out, I looked for a sponsor. I looked for a sponsor. Yeah, when my money ran out. That's what they say. Yeah, hey, there's a sponsor over there, you know, and they would buy you a drink. Yeah, they'd get you a drink. So sponsor was not a new word to me when I got to AA, you know. And now I hit Harlem Hospital in 1967. My urine had turned the color of Coca-Cola. My 4 children was in the hallway, and they said, my youngest daughter, Gail, said, Ma, we got to take you to the hospital. And they took me to the hospital, and they kept me. And the doctor said, you're an alcoholic, Dr. Williams. Always get your doctor's names. That helped you get in the door, you know, when you go back for any reason. And, of course, he'd tell the interns, following instructions. And then he told the interns that I had cirrhosis of the liver. No, I'm sorry, hepatitis. So you got hepatitis. So the next day he came and he told the interns to strike out hepatitis, excuse me, and put cirrhosis of the liver. Now, from 1965 to 1967 when I was in the hospital, my son, who used drugs, came down in 65 with yellow jaundice. Now, from 65 to 67, the terminology changed to hepatitis. My son used to say to me, Ma, I was working at a school. I was a school aide, too, from 62 to 67. And he used to say, Ma, your liver might be damaged. Your eyes look yellow, your fingernails look yellow. And I would go in the bathroom in the nurse's office, and I would look in the mirror, and I'd look at my nails. Of course, they didn't look yellow to me because I was still drinking, right? And I couldn't identify with him because I didn't shoot drugs. So I couldn't identify with him, but I believed him. I believed what he said. So when I was in the hospital, the doctor said if I drank again, I wouldn't live to see 3 years. And I stayed in there for 30 days. That's where the 30 come in at. I stayed in there for 30 days. I went down from 146 to 116. Of course, I don't have the strength I had then. They had put me on the porch because they said that I couldn't be in the ward with the other patients. I had to use paper utensils, and I couldn't get on the ward with the rest of the people. So I called my grandmother, Ma, they won't let me on the ward. She sent my daughter over, and my daughter came, and my grandmother came first. And she said, I'm not going to curse, because I don't like cursing anyway. But she said, that bee just want to get out and get a drink. Keep her in here. Don't even let her out of here, you know. So then my daughter came, my oldest daughter, God rest her soul. And she came over and she started banging on the foot of the bed. Mom, 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 what's wrong with you? You trying to kill Grandma? And I started putting my Vaseline in her pocket and my toothpaste and everything. I said, they won't let me on the ward. And I seen her go to the nurse, and the nurse went over, and they was locking the windows and stuff. And I was wondering what that was about, you know, even though I was, I didn't know nothing about hallucinations, and I sure didn't know nothing about DTs. But my daughter must have got that in school and learned about that. So after being in sobriety for a while, I asked my daughter, I said, why did you go over to the nurses and talk to them about the window? She said, Ma, I didn't know whether you was going to jump or what. You know, that's how out of it I was. I thought my husband and his friend was scaling the roof, scaling the building. And the nurse came in and called the doctor and told him what I had said. And he said, he was about my height. I don't remember what he looked like. He said, Miss Roach, what seems to be the trouble? I said, Percy and Maxie's out there scaling the roof and getting ready to throw garbage pails in here. He said, well, where they at now? I said, they live at KI28214. So I took numbers for 11 years, so I got a photographic mind, you know. So anyway, they dialed the number and they gave me the phone. I said, Evelyn was Maxie's girlfriend. I said, Evelyn, Percy and Maxie's on their scale on the roof. She said, B, what's wrong with you? Maxie been in jail a year. He ain't out there, you know. So anyway, I told the nurse to give me a sedative, give me something, you know, because now I'm out of it. I don't know what's going on, you know, but Evelyn brought me back for a minute. Because I'm thinking that these things are happening. Then my son comes, and he unties me because they tied me down because I tried to leave the ward, and they tied me down. And my son came, and he untied my hand and was talking to me. So I stayed in there those 33 days. I went home. I remember what the doctor said, that if I drank again, I wouldn't live to see 3 years. And my girlfriend's mother, everybody drank on 140th Street, and she used to sneak me a bottle, and I would drink it. My oldest daughter took me to Metropolitan Hospital. They couldn't find nothing wrong with me. She brought me home. And that's when I began to learn that I couldn't be taking no bottles to Chase Manhattan, to the bank where I was working. And I had a little bit more dignity other than when I was working at Chock Full of Nuts. I kept about half a pint in my pocket and go in the locker and drink, you know. And after a while, that's when I went to the rectory. It was just too much. I owed people from poker. I owed them for the poker games. I owed Abraham and Strauss, Gimbel's, Bloomstein, the Dog Pound, and all. The ninth step was coming through my mailbox a long time ago. A long time ago. And these were the... boy. Phew, goodness. Hindsight. Anyway, Father Dugan suggested AA to me, and I thank God. Good orderly direction, because we all got a God as we understood him, past tense, understood him. And that's what's been working for me so far. People gave me their number at my first meeting. Three people came up and gave me their numbers and a meeting list book. I didn't tell them that I didn't like to ride the subway because I had them thoughts. I didn't know how to get all that out then, you know. But as I began to keep coming, I learned how to tell my story, not your story, my story. And that's what keeps me. I do service, not a lot. I do as much as I can. I'm a senior citizen, so I know how to take it easy and get the opportunities that's out there for the seniors, right? Lunch for a dollar, subway a dollar, bus a dollar, you know, and things of that nature. And that's what we learn in here. We learn how to use the opportunity that I would like to refer to the seventh step, humbly ask him, I wondered why him was there, not God. And God revealed to me that Him is the universe. All the different things that I've shared thus far is behind me today. I owed a few dollars. It was a few dollars then, but 2,000 something. That's a few dollars today. But that was a lot of money back in the late 60s and the early 70s, especially when I was only making $86 a week. Yeah, $86 at the bank. But see, I went in there. I didn't know that electric typewriters was out when I went for that job in 69. Because by me working at the school, it was manual typewriting. But see, alcohol had stunted my growth in so many areas. When I took that test with the electric typewriter, the interviewer man, I guess he said, this is like a baby's typing. I didn't know when you touch the keys, they were going to, you know, reflect on the paper and what have you. So he was nice. He told me go home and come back in 2 weeks. Because I went for go home and come back in 2 weeks. And I went home, I told my children. So my daughter said, Ma, they told you to come back in 2 weeks. So I went back in 2 weeks as a file clerk. And I got the job. Then I got scared because they say you couldn't be too fat and you couldn't do this. I figured they're going to see my liver when they examine me, you know, for the cirrhosis and all that other stuff. But all they did was took an x-ray and through AA and good orderly direction, I was able to retire from there in 1997. I went through a lot in the 18th year. Because every supervisor that came in played, can you top this with the other supervisor? It was like more bountiful things that you had to do in the work. And then I got a transfer and I became in demand because they was going to terminate me and some other people that had been there longer than I had because of the production. But I'm grateful that I'm in Alcoholic Anonymous. I've learned how to, and my sponsor just gave me this recently, I've learned how to live and let live and respect the differences of anybody's standards or whatever they do or how they work the program. It tells us, I heard somebody reading page 103, that's about the interaction or one of those chapters. I've learned from the books, I've learned from the old timers, I've learned from y'all. I love this group. I love the standards of it, the structure. I love it. It's beautiful. And when I first came in, we used to dress up anyway. I was wearing two splits up the side, and I thought I was at a cocktail sip still in my head, you know, the pattern of going to a cocktail sip on Sundays at 5 o'clock. And one of the male members who looked pretty good, he came over to me and he said, Joyce, you don't have to do that. So these are the things, those are just some of the tidbits that I've learned since being in Alcoholic Anonymous. I've been in sobriety for 35 years and 6 months, one day at a time. Thank you for letting me share.